Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine a light on the path ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together, and to address problems together rather than defend positions. Last week on Wiki Politiki, we spoke with noted author David Corton on what he calls a transition to an ecological civilization, which is a daunting challenge. This week, our guest Timothy Nobles offers, well, an outrageous assertion that we have more than enough resource and capability to do exactly that. Here's a quote from Timothy. "We have much more than enough capability and resources for all of us humans to live in graceful abundance, with no one who is now prosperous needing to revert to a less soul-satisfying lifestyle. Simultaneously, we have more than enough of everything we require to rapidly convert to a skillful, symbiotic relationship with the Earth and with all other life forms on Earth that we can sustain for hundreds of millions of years." Well, at a time when just about everyone else is saying that we have less than enough, at a time when we're already using the equivalent of 1.7 Earths, how can that be? Well, I'm sure in for a very interesting and controversial conversation today. Now, while Timothy's assertion might sound outrageously idealistic, his life experience is very much in the real dealistic realm. He lived for 10 years on the farm, one of the largest and most effective experimental communities that emerged from the spiritual revolution of the 1960s and the work of Stephen Gaskin. After leaving the farm, Timothy worked for many years in the R&D laboratories of the world's largest technological companies, including IBM, Intel, and Texas Instruments. In his soon-to-be-released book, which is called More Than Enough, How We Enroll Billions of People to Implement Global Prosperity and Restore the Earth, Timothy cheerfully and relentlessly offers plenty of evidence of our capabilities, not just as technologists, but as caring and compassionate human beings. For the first time in recorded human history, he says, we have the means to self-organize in a non-dominational way and to experience true equality and individual and societal fulfillment. Okay, welcome, Timothy.
Hi, Steve. I really appreciate you reading that quote. I wanted to say that, you know, people don't often think of us as continuing sustainably for hundreds of millions of years. But the fact is, the dinosaurs, they had a 170 million year run. And I like to think that we can do at least that well.
We're going to outdo the dinosaurs. Well, I think we may need to dislodge some of the dinosaurs that are currently standing in the way. How is it? How do you reason that we have more than enough?
Well, you know, I've been looking for solutions ever since I was a child. In the 1950s, I was pretty struck with the notion that we were doomed by the nuclear war hanging over us and all of our horrific things like that. And I just became very, very determined to read, study, and it seemed to me that there was a way, given how intelligent and productive the people I saw around me were, that we could break through and find smart ways to take care of ourselves and resolve these situations. And so that's how I came to write More Than Enough, and seeing that the way we do it is by showing billions of us there's really a simple way for us to thrive long term on Earth.
Mm-hmm. And so obviously you've been cooking this for many, many, many years. I remember that you had a first iteration of this idea that was called Growing Up as a Species, and that was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. How is it that, what are our capabilities that we apparently are not able to see right now?
Well, you know, I was riding on the airlines years ago, and I was seeing how incredibly capable millions of people had to be to keep these machines in the air reliably. And then I compared that to, well, why aren't our, say, financial and political and just generally business on the ground anything like this level of efficiency and capability and fail-safe? And then I just started pursuing, well, how could we make it all work? As well as certain few things that we're doing that we do to an incredible level of super capability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other piece is that I started writing...
Yeah.
I started writing this yet another one of these large books that would make a good doorstop. Mm-hmm. That, you know, a tiny percentage of intellectuals and specialists might read. And then my friend Jack Weens, who's a children's book illustrator and fine artist and amazing cartoonist, came along and said, oh, I see what idea you're trying to convey, and put one page illustration that said better than I could say it in 20,000 words.
Aha.
And I said, bingo.
So you're saying that this book makes these ideas more accessible to people. So yes, you spoke about the obvious, the capabilities that we have in a life or death situation, which is really what the airlines flying are. I mean, it's not just about not losing your baggage; it's about not losing your people, and they've had a tremendous track record. How is it that we align ourselves with that level of capability, and what's the motivation to change how things are done right now?
Well, in the case of the airlines, there's a simple motivation for every single stakeholder in the system to be in perfect alignment, which is if they started falling out of the air, everybody's doomed in the system. You know, you're not going to sell any airplanes or sell any airline tickets if they're falling out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the book, I describe a simple way that we could realign our priorities to where in all of our systems we required super capability of our systems. and set up accountability to where the major players just absolutely made sure that it worked, just like the major players in the airline industry make sure it works.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we can, we have a high level of efficiency in some things that have more to do with extracting things from the earth than sustaining. So it's not just the capability, it's the context that the capability is taking place in. What is the context for making this change, and how will that work?
Well, let me go back to saying that the reason that I say that we have, actually I say that we have on the order of 100 times more than enough of the capability and resources we need to take care of all of us in graceful abundance, and at the same time mount a global turnaround of how we do all of our stuff so that we rebalance our climate and begin powerfully restoring the Earth's life support systems. And the reason that we actually have much, much more than enough to do that is because the question is, well, if there's more than enough, where is it? Why doesn't anybody see it? And the reason we don't see it is that we are using up or suppressing 98% or more of our human effort, resources, etc., in the games we play of trying to protect ourselves from each other while simultaneously trying to exploit each other.
It's predator against predator here. At the I'm not okay, you're not okay corral. That's
exactly, you know, and it's 1% efficient.
Yes. Yeah, and that's certainly true, and I would agree wholeheartedly that if we look at that, if we recognize, as Bruce Lipton says, that we're really all cells in the super species called humanity, that a lot of our behavior in relation to one another could be considered autoimmune disease, that you have healthy cells fighting other healthy cells, you have competition, which the Greeks meant by competition, they meant to strive together. And so
yes.
when the Greeks were running in these races, they weren't trying to beat the other guy, they were simply using the other one as their pace car and using the best performances of everybody to spark us to our own best performances. So what if we were in competition in the Greek sense, striving together to create something that benefits everybody? So I think that if you asked people if that would be their preference, I think a lot of people would say, yeah, that's my preference, but it's not really possible because there's some other aspects of the human psyche that have been so habituated to going one against the other that it would be so radically different and so radically counteractive to what people have called quote-unquote human nature that you would be fighting the tide of human development rather than riding the crest of evolution. So what do you say to that?
Well, I'm saying that it's not so much human nature as it is human habit. And when we came together, at the beginnings of intensive agriculture and us having more than a few hundred people, suddenly we had a few thousand, and then we had a few tens of thousands, and then a few millions of people, that we ran into a systems crisis. And the way we had coordinated ourselves before was that we were able to look each other in the eye and figure out, you know, face to face in big circles of us, how it can all work for all of us. But once we reached the point where there was just way too many of us to be able to efficiently do that, we dropped back to our old great ape pattern of the biggest, most aggressive males telling everybody to get in line so that they could all coordinate to defend themselves, take stuff away from others, work together, and so on. And so our coordination system shifted over to a basically an abusive central hierarchy, much like a lot of our great ape ancestors had. So that's become an entrenched habit. It was what effectively built our vast cities and empires and so forth over the past 6,000 years. But that has run its course, and it's about to take us out.
Exactly.
So we're ready for the next evolution.
Yeah.
Obsolethal. Yeah. But now we're ready for the next evolution.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that it was an evolutionary necessity that we passed through this phase, and like every aspect of evolution, there has to be a crisis, something that will not allow us to continue at this level of organization. We're going to take a little break in a minute, and then when we come back with Timothy Nobles, we'll talk more about how we really do have more than enough.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with Timothy Nobles, who's talking about how we really do have more than enough. We are at the point where we can no longer continue on the old organizing, dominate or be dominated, top-down pattern. As our great ape ancestors And now, to paraphrase the Fire Sign Theater, I think we're all bonobos on this bus. So how do we make the shift from great ape to bonobos, and how does our current knowledge and technology help us do that?
Well, our old system basically runs on fear and coercion. And we're trying to protect ourselves from each other and trying to coerce others into taking care of us and feeding us and so on and so forth. And that generates so much blowback, as they say, and resentment and so forth, and so many layer upon layer upon layer of overhead of trying to protect ourselves and trying to scam others, that it's just very, very, it always has been very inefficient. Mm-hmm. But now suddenly, with the large majority of people on Earth having a globally connected supercomputer in their pocket, we suddenly have the capability to shift to a golden rule default for human interaction. Mm-hmm. And a agreement that everything, all of our agreements should come out to be mutually beneficial. That we can, instead of now having to depend on an enormous and increasingly dysfunctional central hierarchy, we can coordinate ourselves in this vast network, this vast wiki of ways to even securely exchange value through our tiny little computers and even talk to each other. It'll even translate our languages. We have suddenly, it's sort of like the opposite of the Tower of Babel. That we've suddenly, and we're suddenly able to, I'm proposing, implement love, trust, respect, and cooperation for mutual benefit economics. And that the key to doing that is our new global coordination network. And for the first time in the history of civilization, billions of us can coordinate and cooperate efficiently without these huge central hierarchies wasting or suppressing our productivity. And then the next piece of that is that we can use this network to talk to each other and come to a agreement that this is what we're going to do. And we can pull out our communicators and speak in a single voice to our world coordination systems saying, we're going to live and thrive now. Mm-hmm. That's the vision.
Okay. Now, let me lay this out a little bit. Yeah, we've had a couple of guests on our show. We've had Joan Blades from Living Room Conversations. We've had Richard Lang from National Town Square, and both of these are looking at ways of connecting and engaging people from really across diverse lines and so on. I can understand that we have the technological capability and potential through these personal devices that just about everyone has. However, as we look at how communications have been taking place through these devices, we see that it's a lot like the Tower of Babel, that more than ever before, we have alternative news, alternative realities, and the people on the different sides are not just disagreeing. They're living in alternative realities. And so how do we break that trance so that we can implement this global prosperity?
Well, the purpose of More Than Enough is to put out a simple, simple, simple realization that we are right now creating much more than enough for everything we need, and The fact is, we humans are in pretty close to 100% agreement that we want to thrive. I mean, that's a bottom line right there that's not being emphasized.
Right, it isn't.
And so we say that we claim a middle ground from which religious conservatives, atheist professors, New Age mystics, social justice activists, libertarians, indigenous tribes, Fortune 100 CEOs, the poorest 2 billion of us, and the millionaires and billionaires of the 0.1% can all see a positive world, can all see how they can win to come together around this agreement that we want to thrive.
You know, what I see, and I appreciate, I've read your book in many iterations and looked through the illustrations and so on. What I really value about that book is that you have collated and aggregated and curated many of the great ideas and projects that people are working on right now. And until now, there hasn't been a single place where these ideas and projects could come out and play together. And, you know, you might want to, you know, what are some of the luminaries and solutionaries who you've included in this book, the people whose work your conclusion is founded on? Say more about some of the people whose work you cite as evidence for.
Well, let me start by saying that right now, I'm celebrating 77 heroes who have found the solutions that, when we put them all together, give us a whole solution. And the first half of the book is illustrated with cartoons, and it tells the story in a simple, easy to grasp way. Then the second half of the book, I get pretty textual there, and I review and celebrate about 85 books and sources from these 77 heroes. And I start out with Lester Brown, who's spent 50 years telling us how we can survive on Earth by pulling it all together with his book, World on the Edge, How to Prevent Environmental and Economic Collapse. Then Jeffrey Sachs, The End of Poverty. And going across, you know, the political bounds, neoconservative professor Francis Fukuyama wrote the book Trust, the Social Virtues and the Creation of Prosperity. And, of course, sort of the motto of the book is trust and respect pay big. And then business guru Stephen Covey, the speed of trust, the one thing that changes everything. And then one of my great heroes, Dov Seidman, the business consultant whose book is How We Do Anything Means Everything. And then going on to the Dalai Lama. Jeremy Rifkin, his Zero Marginal Cost Society, and his Third Industrial Revolution shows how we're creating, he basically makes the case for me that we're creating 100 times more than enough already. And then it just kind of goes on and on to Otto Scharmer, Leading from the Emerging Future, Seth Godin, Pope Francis, celebrate his encyclical on the care of our common home, and trucking on through, looking at Barbara Marx Hubbard's Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential, and then moving on into Native American original peoples' voices from around the world who've given us a lot of the keys for how we survived over the past couple of million years by coordinating together in at a very, very high level. And then moving into new science, there's 6 pages just to list the books and heroes. And I'm afraid I'm something of a bookworm, but that's where I found the solutions. You there, Steve? Oh, my God. Oh, sure. I'll do it. And we look at, Amory Lovins, who has given us, for the past 40 years with his Rocky Mountain Institute, he's really figured out many, many, many of the techniques that multiply our energy capabilities hundreds of times, including the hybrid car. And then looking at the Iroquois Nation gave us the incredible document, A Basic Call to Consciousness. And then Rion Eisler's The Chalice and the Blade, Our History, Our Future. And I just love David Corton's taking off from her with his book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. And then Joseph Stiglitz, The Price of Inequality, How the Divided Society Endangers Our Future. And Lynn Twist, The Soul of Money, Returning to the Wealth of Our Inner Resources. And then, coming around, just Bruce Lipton and Steve's book, Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here. And Gene Houston's Jump Time, Shaping Your Future in a World of Radical Change.
So we've had some enormous heroes that you've cited in this, and context is everything. And so you all of this great content. What I love about your approach is that you've woven this into a singular narrative.
Yes, with many of these people, we've taken our caricatures of them, and we've put them into the cartoons. And we have them speaking their key lines, and then we explain how they fit and what they've done enlightens and enlivens us.
Very interesting indeed. So you do have, and I've always been impressed with how many of these people who may or may not know one another, really, because they're, they've been working in their own domains, in their own playgrounds and so on. And this book seems to weave that all together. My question is, now that we, and this will probably take the last part of the program to really discuss this, now that we see that there are these ways to reconfigure how we spend our time and energy, how do we deal with the very, very, very entrenched system that right now seems to be going backward in the wrong direction? How do we actually make that change in the context of a system that does not want to change, where the power and the money at this moment seem to be aligned on keeping the status quo and running out the clock?
Well, I call these people the economic warlords. Mm-hmm. And we've had military warlords, economic warlords, social warlords. And I actually express gratitude to them because they've gotten us to this point of there being 7.5 billion of us cooperating at an incredibly fine level of coordination. However, they're not about to open their grip and let us frolic, So that's why the subtitle of the book is How We Enroll Billions of People to Implement Global Prosperity and Restore the Earth Now. The cover illustration that we use, and if people want to see that, they could go to morethanenoughnow.org, and that's our cover, is we're showing a picture of the globe with, it's a little hard to depict in a cartoon, billions of people, but it kind of looks like it. And we have some of our heroes on the computer, on the phone, on broadcasting out to these people, hey, it's time for us to do it. And then arising from that mass, you know, in a great cartoon letters, it says, do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the only way. You know, we have these thousands of different campaigns pushing on one aspect of this or the other, and sometimes they win and sometimes they lose. The only way we're going to be able to do this rapidly enough for us to be able to solve our pressing global problems of climate and inequality and so on and so forth is for, I'm calling for us to start a global citizens movement of millions of cells of groups of friends who help facilitate the conversation, the dialogue, and the medium of billions of us reaching a point where we can pull out our communicators and speak in one voice and say, we're doing it with love and justice and nurturing now instead of with force and abuse.
Exactly.
That's the story.
Exactly. Yeah, and the thing is, there's that famous quote from Eisenhower, there will come a time when the people of the world want peace so badly, the governments have to give it to them. And right now, given the fact that we are so connected, we have that potential to do that if only we realize it and only we cohere around this idea. We'll be back after this break with Timothy Nobles, author of More Than Enough.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you waken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back for the final segment on Wiki Politiki with Timothy Nobles. He's the author of More Than Enough. His contention is that we actually do have more than enough. We just don't know our power. And, you know, I'm reminded of a story that Francis Moore LePay tells about Gandhi. There's a turning point in
Gandhi's campaign is when he realized that the people of India outnumbered the British colonials by 300,000 to 1. And that sort of changed the context. And so how do we get billions of people to recognize this power that we have to finally say, this is what we want. We want our world to fall into this new pattern or rise into this new pattern, perhaps a better way to put it. How do we create this movement of movements, this international citizens movement?
Well, Steve, we have messages going out that connect to billions of people. We get Korean pop music videos that get 2.5 billion views. And, you know, when something big happens in the world, billions of people hear about it within a day. It's not it's doable. And so if you a simple message that we have much, much more than enough, and that we unlock it and get to use it and multiply it when we decide en masse to treat each other the way we ourselves would like to be treated. It seems like that's something, if it were put together with like really cute cartoons and a really clear presentation, that a lot of people could catch on to. It's just so simple. And the majority of people on Earth, I'm pretty sure, basically agree with the principle of treating each other the way we ourselves would like to be treated, as almost every religious tradition for the past 4,000 or 5,000 years has said some version of that. And so one of the kinks that I'm trying to exploit is that we have so much more than enough that we would essentially unleash a renaissance of peace, prosperity, abundance, just a heaven on earth that could be triggered by our global decision to make the golden rule, treating each other the way we'd like to be treated, our basic policy default of how we interact with each other. And so I'm trying to promote the idea that this could go like bang. It would be like almost the equivalent of everybody on Earth winning a gigantic lottery in terms of a material and spiritual and educational and cultural abundance. Well, yeah, so it sounds like a good story to me.
We do have some examples of that. You know, the fact that when the United States was founded and we decided that we didn't want to have the military borders between, let's say, Maine and New Hampshire or, you know, Illinois and Indiana, the fact that we don't, that these states have disarmed, that they're part of one country that's not armed against itself, led to tremendous efficiency. Same with the unification of Germany in the 1880s, that these city-states no longer had to hold military against one another. So I think we've got examples of how cooperation, I like that you cited the speed of trust. However, at the same time, we have our internal psyche. And as Bruce Lipton tells us, 95% of what runs us is subconscious, and most of that is programmed by the time that we're 6 or 7 years old. So even though we might have the external an intellectual desire to have these things be different. Our DNA and habitual ways of being that are not even conscious to us, that they're happening at an unconscious level, have in a certain regard kept these things from being looked at in a different way. That we have the ideal and we have the real deal, and we've had the golden rules has seemed to have been an ideal. Thou shalt not kill hasn't prevented warfare. The Swami says, oh, it's thou shalt not kill unless done in extremely large groups. That's okay. So how do we overgrow these patterns of learning and behavior and programming at this time on a grand enough scale that we move the dial? Even, you know, obviously it doesn't have to be everybody, but we have to get a critical mass of people making that switch in context.
Well, you know, I think the message of let's get prosperous and happy together, it's a question of everybody relaxing at a level and saying, oh, it's not really quite as bad. It's not as dire as we've thought. And I think a good example of realizing that there actually is ways around our really, really, really scary problems is this recent book, Drawdown, where it assembled something like over 100 PhDs who worked for a couple of years and researched and defined 100 different pathways by which we could reduce carbon emissions and start drawing down CO2 from the atmosphere and cooling the Earth. And I think that that's a prime example of how people could look at something and say, oh, yeah, we're not doomed. If we really, really came together in mass and made changes, we could have a very, very, very different future.
Well,
and I agree that, we yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Oh, I was going to say, you want to complete your idea. Finish your idea, and then I'll ask my question, my follow-up question.
Well, I'm saying, that there are many different arenas where we can rationally look and say, oh, there is a path here that would work to lift, my main thing I'd like to see. I think the thing that brings up all of these constrictive attitudes from within us is fear. And if we find what's one of the ambitions for More Than Enough, it's to show people, oh, there's more than enough. We don't have to be afraid, and we can relax and let other people see us and cooperate for our mutual benefit. And that's the picture I've got, is that if we release our fear and guardedness and sense that there's not enough, that we can kind of pull our way up bit by bit from this well of habit of believing in fear and scarcity that has been basically with us all during this 6,000 years of empire and city building. But our ancestors prior to that, who lived, as the Haudenosaunee Iroquois say, straight from the hand of God every day, they saw abundance. They weren't afraid nearly as much as people are in the techno-agricultural world.
Yeah, and these days people are not so much seeing the hand of God as the middle finger. They're seeing that more. Now, you mentioned Paul Hawkins' Drawdown book. We have a mutual colleague who just put out a piece saying that that's mostly fluff and nonsense, that it's part of the Tinkerbell effect, imagining that something is going to save us, and that the situation is really more dire than that. And there are people who are over on that end of the spectrum. You sent me a wonderful little quote that I want to wrap up the show by discussing this. And you said, quote, "There is a profound and passionate truth at both ends of most dichotomies. And the middle ground doesn't have to be a weak position. We can appreciate and act on the passion on both ends of the dichotomy. We can take a passionate, strong-hearted path down the middle that fulfills the visions of both sides," unquote. Now, this, of course, speaks to our colleagues who might think we're in a time of great scarcity and danger. So I'm curious, since you laid this out in a quote, how do we use this dichotomy to gather all good intentions under one big intent?
Well, for me, this sense that we're doomed has been a lifelong. I was 4 years old when a tent revival meeting preacher convinced me that the bomb was going to fall that night and we were all going to be vaporized. And I've played at that end of the dichotomy quite a lot in my life, and my life has been about seeing how that might not be true. And so I read that piece, and the thing is, he's right. If we don't pull a few billion of us together and make rapid, massive shift. And the reason he calls it the Tinkerbell effect is he just doesn't believe that that he thinks that it's in the realm of magic that we could actually, billions of us, come together with intelligence and force and say, we're going to do it. And so I see both sides of that dichotomy. I feel very much in alignment in many ways with what he sees. But I'm just bringing in another end of it that says, look, we could do this miraculous thing, billions of us pulling out our phones and saying, we're doing it different now, folks.
That is certainly possible. And I think that using the direness of it, the trick is to see the direness of the situation and at the same time not give in to that, and still continue to look at what can we do. And as I my interview with Terry Patton several weeks ago, it was, well, you know what? We may be midwifing a new human species, and there's that possibility that we could be hospicing our species as well. And using the currency of the golden rule will work no matter what. So whether, in other words, we cannot know the outcome of this. And what we do have the choice in is how we act and how we be. So in the final 2 minutes or so that we have, those people who are listening to this conversation, what can change with them in the next short period of time that will make them a beacon, make them a connector, make them one of the luminaries who you've cited in your book?
I would say to look at this solution set that we're offering by going to morethanenoughnow.org. The first three chapters are online, and much of the closing matter is also. And we're coming up on publishing. I've got a great agent right now. It's probably going to be the fall before we come out. But I would love to get emails. I want to set up a nonprofit, but I'm soliciting all kinds of support we're going to do this. And I have a clear picture that it's going to happen. So I would urge people to learn more about it. I know what we've given you is just a tiny little few drops of it. Go to morethanenoughnow.org and read our first three chapters.
That would be a very good start. I've been following this project for a few years, and I've been so happy to see how it's developed and how this has gotten pieced together. Again, this is a time when we need context more than we need content. There's plenty of content out there. And having read this book numerous times in various incarnations, More Than Enough is a wonderful context that weaves together many, many solutions into a coherent piece. You've done a tremendous amount of research as a lifelong learner and reader and aggregator. We've been talking with Timothy Nobles, morethanenoughnow.org. His book is More Than Enough. This is Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki, and we'll catch you again next week.